Are you looking for a book to boost your child's self-esteem and image? Listen to what six-time Emmy Award winner and Nobel Peace Prize nominee Shawn Duperin has to say about the Journey of Joy children's book series. She says, quote, "It's inspiring to find a children's book series that gets to the heart of why we're here and to enjoy life's journey. It is truly compelling. It reinforces your child's strong sense of self, the essence of what every parent wants for their precious child. I highly recommend," end quote. The four inspiring and beautifully illustrated books in the Journey of Joy children's book series, authored by Beth Donnelly and Dagny Grant, can be found on Amazon.com. Sharing the wisdom of positive I am statements, these books are titled I Am Enough, I Am Unique and Awesome, I Am Great, and I Am Brave. Pick up a set for the children in your life today. Just go to Amazon.com and enter Journey of Joy series. That's Journey of Joy series. Welcome to the Echoes of the Universe radio show, brought to you by Matrix Productions. Conscious conversations with Dagny Grant and Beth Donnelly, sharing thought-expanding moments to nourish your soul.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to the Echoes of the Soul radio show, brought to you by Matrix Productions. This is Dagny Grant, and I'm here with my co-host, Beth Donnelly, for a conversation with Robert O. Williams, who has both a remarkable resume and life story. He's not only the author of the recently released book, Love is the Power, Moving Humanity from Fear to Love, but he is also the inventor and developer of quantum code technology, a.k.a. QCT, and sympathetic resonance technology, a.k.a. SRT, as the co-founder of 108, Inc., a Portland-based innovative technology company. Now, 108 is, this innovative global technology company that has a mission to improve the lives of all human beings worldwide by developing and bringing to market scientifically based life-changing mobile apps and clean technology products that improve the health, performance, and lifestyles of all of its customers. In addition, Robert co-developed a way to revitalize drinking water, restoring the molecular relationships of H2O to match those of pristine healing waters found around the planet. We're really looking forward to speaking with him a little bit about that coming up in a few minutes as well. This research was conducted by world-renowned water expert and material scientist Professor Rustam Roy at Penn State University. And before I share a little bit more about our guest today and we bring him on to the show, let me bring my co-host, Beth Donnelly, on to check in with us. Hey, Beth.
Hi, Dagny. How you doing?
Really well. I'm having a good day today. Thanks.
It is, you know, it's so super great here in the Pacific Northwest. Today, it's like sunny and blue skies all around, so I'm really happy. I am also very intrigued and pretty interested in our guest topic today, particularly his book, Love is the Power, Moving Humanity from Fear to Love, because, you know, fear to love is something that you and I talk about a lot, isn't it? We even produced a whole show on it at one time, I think. So it's pretty fascinating. And the part of this topic that I love so much is the energetic frequency of love. And it's like, what is it, 528 hertz. And many believe that tuning into this frequency can heal and bless and manifest, and that it resonates at the heart level and is really our connection to source. And, you know, I can look in my life and I can certainly feel the resonance of my heart energy, especially when I listen to certain music, because music is, well, totally big thing for me, and it can literally transmute my energy in seconds, really. So I depend on that a lot, and I also feel this kind of heart energy, this love energy in nature. And I love standing by a waterfall, for instance, and I'm thinking that's scalar wave energy. I'm pretty sure that's what that's called. And I can also feel it when I'm, you know, looking at the ocean. That's just, it's such an awesome, awesome thing to be standing near the ocean. And of course, you and I both find it, I know, just playing with our dogs. That just seems to be such an enjoyable way to express love energy and to receive it from the animal kingdom. So there's just so many ways to access this energy, and I just can't wait to find out more about Robert Williams' story and his products and inventions, and it'll be great.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole love versus fear thing, it's kind of like that flip side of the coin. We've talked about the, you know, pretty much every emotion that someone has is on the love spectrum or the fear spectrum. They may be called something like grief or pain or sorrow or you know, or fear or joy or bliss or gratitude. But they're, you know, the fear and love. I love the title of his book just for that very reason, that it really is that that's kind of simple in its ability to define it. And so, yeah, I'm really looking forward to he's up to so much stuff, Robert is. And so let me talk a little bit more about what's going on with him and what he's been up to. Before we bring him on, he, as an expert in the study of subtle energy engineering and its effect on physical systems, Robert's research has provided scientific breakthroughs in field-based technologies, consciousness, and human potential. In addition to being an inventor and author, Robert has also enjoyed success as a musician and educator. He taught music at university level and recorded and performed with such artists as the Beach Boys, Paul Horn, and Charles Lloyd, which is pretty darn cool. The direction of Robert's life and career changed in 1979 when he had a near-death experience. From that point on, he devoted all of his time and energy towards researching consciousness and subtle energy, along with conventional physics and medicine. Since then, he worked with numerous prominent professors and scientists from Stanford University, the University of California at Berkeley, Pennsylvania State University's Department of Material Sciences, and the University of California, Irvine's Department of Biology. After his near-death experience, his study of the relationships between particle physicality and the spaces between the particles, or non-physical domains, led him to the discovery of the technology that, he claims, saved his life. He calls the discovery more of a revelation than anything else. After years of struggle, suddenly comprehended the profound interconnectedness of nature and the innate intelligence at the foundation of all life. He then left the music business to study the technology as it affected the growth rate and health of sprouts and plants, which is also a topic I just absolutely adore. He co-founded Coherence Industries in 1985 that served to begin extensive research and development of devices and products for the masses. In January of 1991, Robert co-founded Claris Products International and Claris Transphase Scientific, which has sold more than 1,700,000 products worldwide to date. His book describes in raw detail how his life journey continued to turn from one direction to another, eventually leaving him struggling for his life, and the unexpected revelation that through various means has improved the quality of life for millions. Robert currently lives in Northern California, the Northern California country, with his wife, his 11-year-old daughter, and their horse, Lucky. Lucky, what a beautiful name for a horse. Beth has horses all over the room she's in right now. Horses are an amazing spirit. So hey, thank you so much for joining us today, Robert. We really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show.
Dagny and Beth, it is such a privilege to be on your show. You're doing such great work and important work. So thank you for inviting me. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I guess, going right into the book, why did you decide to write your incredible life story as a book?
There's two answers to that. One is I have a good friend who's been bugging me for the last 15 years to write a book. So that's one reason. He just says, come on, you gotta write this stuff down. These are cool stories. The other part of my answer is I am always researching or paying attention to mass consciousness and to global phenomenon and looking at what's going on the blatant level and then on the subtle levels and how things are evolving here. And what really happened when I began to write the book was a collective experience. So in a sense, the book was written by all of us, especially, I don't know if you've noticed, but there were times when writing the book where it wasn't really me. I'm not saying I was out of body channeling, but just there was that creative intelligence that was speaking through me from all of you, from all of the human consciousness that is evolving. And so I couldn't even write that in a first person. So I put in indention and did the italics. And so those parts of the book really are spoken from our own innate collective consciousness and from our own collective hearts, which are linked to all kinds of wonderful things. But the book does have a bunch of stories in it that some find interesting. And really my intention was to use those stories as carrier waves to resonate with each of us, because all of us have certain histories and certain stories and memories of ups and downs. And even though a few of mine were really odd, we can all relate to our lives and the highs and the lows, and hopefully we'll begin to relate with something that's even greater than the highs and the lows, and something that is profoundly blossoming right now on the planet.
Well, it is interesting in the discussions of higher dimensions emerging and the ascension of the masses and all of those, you know, what some would consider very woo-woo topics are it's all very real to those of us who believe. I love how you phrase that. It almost sounds as if, in your talking about, not being able to write in first person, that may have been in some form channeling global consciousness, mass consciousness.
Like I say, I've been to channels, and make it clear, I was still here. I wasn't, disembodied while I was writing those parts, but
sure.
The inspiration came from something way beyond me.
Right. These kind of experiences oftentimes bring people to thoughts of life purpose. I'm wondering if you suppose you were chosen in some way to live these incredibly powerful experiences that you had, and to write this book, to share your insights, to create these products that you've developed. Do you think this is part of an innate purpose for your life?
Let me answer this way. When I was growing up, I had the ability to see, or I was seeing things that others too often thought were just imaginations, or I was mentally ill. But I saw nature spirits, and I saw all kinds of colors and things around people. And one of the experiences that I had with one nature spirit, and that's just a term. I don't know what else. This being was named Jing, and he would visit me in the backyard, and the backyard was full of plants, and we had a great natural environment back there. He would take me around and show me different things. One of the One day, it began to rain, not heavily, but just enough to reveal a rainbow. And he was very excited about that, and I dug a big hole and just would go down in the hole. That's another part of my story. But it was like a 6-foot deep hole. And so I didn't see the rainbow, so he rushed up and got me out and showed me the rainbow. We've all seen rainbows, and we all agree that they're so beautiful. Now, this is a roundabout way to answer your question. I haven't forgot about that, and that is
all good. Rainbows, all perfect.
The rainbow, what caused the rainbow? What caused the rainbow? And that was the question for me from this nature spirit. And I said, well, the water, you know, he said, where did the rainbow come from? Excuse me. Where did the rainbow come from? And I said, well, the water and the light. And he said, no, the rainbow was always there. The rainbows are always here. It's just when the right environmental conditions occur, then we can see the rainbow. And later he emphasized the point when my mom had put sprinklers out there. And, you know, if we've all experienced this. You get to a certain angle, a certain position relative to the sprinkler and the sun, and then we see the rainbow. So everywhere on this planet, there are those seven colors can appear in any moment if the right conditions are at play. So the answer is that we all have our positions. We all have our location in this time of Earth and in this blossoming time, which we can talk about later. And we all participate in the right conditions. And so perhaps I was part of the sprinkler, and somebody else is a ray of light, and somebody else is the atmosphere, and we are all working together in this phenomenal time of Earth to reveal what has been hidden. And so the rainbow is a beautiful analogy. What is slowly but surely, and then it will quickly happen, is a revelation of a higher state of consciousness that we all participate in, that we all have our position in the scheme of things, so that we all can enjoy higher states of consciousness, and we literally will see things we've never seen before on this planet. And so that's my answer. Maybe I'm part of the sprinkler system.
I actually completely adore that answer. That's great.
I like that too.
I believe it. I really believe that. You know, we all have our special locations. We all have our special place. We really do.
So the idea that some things are always there, but we just can't see it at a certain time. That we can't always hear the voice inside of us because we're angry or whatever, that kind of thing. But the answer is always there. I love that. And I also, going back to your answer of the first question, I loved what you said about the collective heart. And I'm thinking that, you know, if we're all one, there's got to be a collective heart. And so I thought that was just perfect. So speaking of that kind of heart space, I'd like to kind of transition into, how did you fall in love with the saxophone?
Well, that's that kind of links to my last answer. So I grew up, as I said, with nature spirits and these beings. When I was with them, there was a certain kind of lightness of being and joy that just was always there. And when I guess I was about 11 years old, 10 or 11 or 12, and so the hormones began to change, right? And the being, Jing was his name, showed up and said, you know, I can't see you anymore. I go, what? Well, you know, you're my only friend. And he says, well, I just can't, you know, we have to end this relationship. And I was so, so sad and very, very distraught and lonely, and I was searching for that lightness of being. I was searching for that joyous state of aliveness that I had experienced so profoundly in nature, in the backyard. And I had been playing the saxophone for a couple of years, kind of toying around with it. My father gave me a sax. And mm-hmm. I started to notice that as I would practice my saxophone, there would be certain times when I knew the scales good enough or I knew the song well enough that something, this is kind of referencing when we first started talking here, something was playing my horn, playing through me, and I experienced that same lightness of being or that same sense of joy, the witness of a creative phenomenon. And I loved it. I go, well, this, you know, this is what I experienced in nature. And I, all of us have experienced those moments in our lives. We might be walking down by the beach, and you mentioned something like that, Beth. We might be just looking at a sunset or singing or dancing or freeing ourselves from our, perhaps freeing ourselves from the habitual patterns that we follow. And we feel that lightness, we feel that joy, we feel that inspiration. And we can experience that in any way, we can show examples. But for me, I started to experience it playing my saxophone, and then that was it. I just couldn't wait to get home from school each day and practice and find those moments where, you know, there would be chilling joyous moments, and that kept me practicing, kept me playing, and then I got into different rock and roll groups and jazz groups and on and on from there.
Oh, I can totally relate to that, because I kind of call that being in the flow, in the moment, and I love what you said, where after you knew the notes and you knew the rhythm, that you sort of just delved into just being there and enjoying that moment of joy and expression. And I feel that in when I sing, and it's a beautiful kind of moment. It is kind of like just looking at a sunset or something. It's really a freeing kind of experience. And I know the saxophone is a fabulous instrument. I love the saxophone.
Me too.
How did you become a performer with the Beach Boys? I thought that was such an interesting a line of your resume. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And I'm going to back into that answer because all of us, whether we're musicians or not, we've experienced those moments. So let's just say we're at a concert, and everybody I've spoken with has agreed. They've been to, well, in my day, a Beach Boy concert, or these days there's all kinds of events that on a mass level engage each participant, whether we're playing the music or whether we're in the audience. So I'll just say my own wonderful experience of playing with the Beach Boys, and I'll tell you how I got in there. So we were on stage, and of course, Good Vibrations is one of their greatest hits. And so we'd start off, you know, I'm not a good singer, so I won't sing it, but as we start playing Good Vibrations, there, if the horn players, I was in that section, and the musicians and everybody that was on stage, it didn't happen every time, but there would be this magical experience where we would feel the unity of our group and then the audience, or maybe it was simultaneous. Everybody in the audience began to kind of sway and sing to the song. And the ticket sellers and the security people, it was a unified experience. Most of us have experienced that at concerts where we're actually elevated to a higher state of consciousness quite spontaneously, without effort. We're not like trying to get to a high state. The music raises us above our regular state, perhaps, and we feel this higher love. And it really is love. I know that when we're in those zones, when we're in those qualities of aliveness, that somebody in the concert wasn't thinking, well, wait a minute, what about that guy over there? Does he agree with me politically? Or what about that person over there? I think, you know, what's in it for me? Well, how come he's doing this and that? So it really engages a reality of compassion and understanding and unity of humanness. And often it would last for several hours. The concerts would end, and people would walk out in this really calm state. You know, there'd be kind of this, the lights would go around, and that is an experience that is beyond whether we're playing an instrument or not, or singing or whatever it is. And like you said earlier, it can happen at any moment. Walking in a natural environment, we feel this higher love, this higher reality. So I actually was very serious with my music and went to Cal State Hayward as a music major. They call it Cal State East Bay now, because that was the music college in the 70s, and was playing about 15, 16 hours a day, including practicing and playing with all my different groups, rock groups, jazz groups, and practicing, classical groups.
Cool.
What happened after what began to happen in my second year of college and into my third year was my jaw began to really, really, really hurt. So in the beginning, you know, so what? Your jaw's hurting. You know, my life was, in those days, you just ignored it. But then one morning I woke up, and I couldn't open my mouth. My jaw had spasmed shut. It was a horrible experience.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So to make a long story short, I started going to dentists and physicians and physical therapists, and I wound up at a clinic in Berkeley. It was the first temporal mandibular joint clinic in the country. It was a new thing back then. And they said, you know what, we took some x-rays, and we see that something has been damaged in your TMJ joint. And when you play the saxophone, the position of your armature is causing, because of the injury, causing the muscles to go into spasm or tighten up. And so I remember him saying, you know, I've got my whole life now planned out. I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to go on the road. I'm going to, you know, get a teaching credential, settle down after a while, teach music at a school, have, you know, be happily married and have three kids. I had it all there. I was 19 and just was all in front of me. And I was pretty good sax player, so part of it was a realistic dream. But now I'm sitting on this dental chair, and he's saying, you know what? He says, there's no cure for this. You just have to give up the saxophone, and maybe you should start playing guitar. You know, everybody plays guitar these days. You know, this was in the 70s.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I go, what, you know? And he says, yeah, I just say, you can't play the sax anymore. Just, you know, just because there's no cure for this. You have to just, you know, the more you play, the more it's going to tighten up, and you can't open your mouth. That's not fun. So just pick the guitar. You know, of course, this was a horrible thing to hear. And I went into one of my first really, really dark nights of depression. And what do you mean, just give up my sax? My whole life is here. My third year of college, I'm going to get my degree. So I was searching for an answer, and I wrote in my diary, I want to find something that can't be taken away from me. And, you know, it sounds very dramatic and kind of pitiful in a way, but I really did believe that there were things innate and in consciousness that weren't dependent upon physicality. I began to meditate, learn TM, and that was really an amazing experience of freedom during meditation. And also, it was the beginning days of a university in Fairfield that was a fully accredited university called Maharishi International University. Fully accredited, that meant you go there and transfer your credits from Cal State and get PhDs or other degrees. It's no longer around. It's in a different form now. But back then, it was a fully accredited college. And I said, well, I'm going to go there because, you know, everybody there meditates and everybody is open to love and creative intelligence.
Right, so it's my tribe.
I almost didn't even bring my saxophone, but I did. And, you know, I could play for an hour a day without the tightness of my jaw and without too much pain. So I just brought it along. Anyway, to fast forward, the second semester of my being a student at MIU, the Beach Boys decided to record an album there. They had all been with the Beatles over in Rishikesh, India, with Maharishi. And they all learned from them. Yeah. It was during the famous Beatle time. And Mike Love particularly was just so involved with meditation, and he wanted to do something. Two reasons why they went out there. He wanted to get the group away from L.A. and the hustle and bustle of the entertainment business and get out to an environment of meditators. And second, he wanted to do something to promote the university. So they built a recording studio out there right on campus, and it was off limits to all the students, you know. But we knew it was there, what happened was that they got to the point where they needed horns on their album, and they were going to fly in musicians from L.A., and somebody told Mike Love, the lead singer of the Beach Boys, that there was this really good saxophone player on campus, and, you know, why not use him, you know, save on flights.
Perfect.
So I got this note in my student mailbox, you know, meet on this, and I was, I'm so nervous. And I had to audition. I had to play the parts, and I had to, you know, show them that I knew enough music to be on their album. And then there I was next day or a couple days later, recording with the Beach Boys, or with, you know, how they do over tracks and stuff. But I met most of the Beach Boys and recorded the horn sections with the horn sections. And then, I didn't want to miss the opportunity that was right there in front of me. So right after the studio sessions, I went up to Mike Love and I said, you know what? I really can't afford to stay going. I can't afford for my second semester. Can I just tour with you guys? Can I just be part of the Beach Boys, you know? And amazingly, he said, yeah, we need a sax player. So just stumbled into that opportunity. Next thing I know, I'm in Santa Barbara. Michael Love had a huge estate there right by the ocean, 14 houses and a full-time cook and our own hot tub and stuff. So from this kind of pitiful state of, what am I all about and my jaw hurts, to, holy moly, now I'm touring with the Beach Boys and doing concerts with them. And experiencing those moments like I began the story with, these higher love experiences. And that, of course, was my life for the following 3 years.
But did your jaw stop hurting?
You know, like I said, as long as I didn't play for more than an hour or two, it was fine. It was fine.
Great.
So you know, I thank God that I had paid my dues prior to the jaw thing, because I was practicing. And Beth, you know, if you got to practice, you got to keep the everything. So I laid down enough prior practice that I could, you know, to tell you the truth, the Beach Boy horn parts are not that complicated. They're just whole notes, you know. But they're the Beach Boys, you know, 20,000 people. So that's how I got involved with them.
Very cool. It kind of just came to you.
It came to me, exactly, which is what life does often, without us even expecting it.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that the story, Robert, is a real testament to when you get an intuitive hit to ask a question, to see what might be possible, to not allow your limiting beliefs to tell you no, to get in the way. Right? I mean, if you had said, well, I'm not good enough, and, oh, of course they're not going to, you know, and they're the Beach Boys, and who am I, and, you know, all of those kinds of things keep people from pursuing their dreams because of this not enough kind of mentality. You know, their self-inflicted I am statements are keep them from really spreading their wings.
Yeah.
So good for you for following your intuitive hits. And I also just wanted to say that I loved what you were saying about, you know, music, the crowd being kind of gathered in a state of oneness by the music, and it's, you know, I think that is such a really profound concept that you know, the heart-centered aspect, the energy of music and dance and art, really does supersede the kind of more thought-centered religious and politics separating, you know, separating junk that goes on between us as humans. And so it's music, art, dance, those things are so important in our culture. And I think also meditation is really important in our culture. And so I, it's one of the things Beth and I both ascribe to and do and teach is meditation. So I'd like to go into that a little bit more for our audience with you too on how did you, so that was how you kind of found out about transcendental say that fast.
We know what you mean, Dogney. We know what you mean.
That's really funny.
Bless your heart.
Meditation. I'm wondering if you could kind of share with us what your thoughts are about the difference between transcendental meditation and other forms of meditation.
I have, I love the question because I have actually tried most of the meditations that are available. I'm sure there's some that I haven't, but I went through a period where I was very, very curious and visited different gurus and different American Indian shamans and African shamans to look at similarities not only of belief and concepts of the other worlds and different dimensions and what was happening on the planet now, but also techniques for realization. And so then learned a bunch of different meditation techniques, and I found them all to be valuable. So I'm here to say that, you know, we all are a bit different, and some things resonate with us at different times. What I really liked about TEM, and that's the easy way to say it, Dogney, just TEM. You know, transcendental. I can't even say it. Transcendental, but, you know. So TM, the way it works is that it's an effortless technique. You actually learn about effortlessness. If that, I know that's a kind of a paradox. If you close your eyes and you just close your eyes, you'll notice that thoughts come without effort. We don't say, now I'm going to think. Or sometimes there's silence, and then a little thought or a little sensation comes. That's the key to TM. You just notice the effortlessness of a thought or a sensation, and you gently replace it with a mantra, and the mantra begins to take you in different ways within your consciousness. And as soon as you realize you're thinking, then you realize you're thinking. That's the point. Oh, because often we're off in a thought. We're often in our lives overshadowed, you could say, or we've lost our identity to whatever is happening in the moment, whatever thought, feeling, emotion is going on. And we've lost connection to that infinite self or the self that is greater than any kind of one or two or three experiences. So the TM technique, if done properly, and a lot of people, they keep repeating the mantra, they keep focused on the mantra. That's actually not the way Maharishi taught it. You know, you don't effort, you don't try. You just naturally see what's going on, and then you replace whatever it is, a thought, a feeling, with the mantra. And then there's different techniques, if the pain's too overwhelming, what to do, and this and that. So I love TM still to this day, because it allows me to practice this state of surrender, in a sense, this effortless being. And it's just a very subtle thing now. You know, I close my eyes, and it's just a little impulse, and then a thought, and then an impulse. So that's what I like about TM. But I do the other ones as well from time to time.
One of the things that you said in your work is that you think it may have actually saved your life. Can you expound on that a little bit?
The realization that we are greater than our bodies, we're greater than our emotions, we're greater than any thought, propelled me into a period of my life of complete faith, complete trust. So back to the Beach Boys. In 1979, I was very, very sick, and the doctors had no clue, or they just did not know what was going on. I had liver failure, kidney failure, and nothing was working. My heart was beating all over the place.
Wow.
My blood tests were showing all kinds of symptomatic measurements, and the doctors, they tried this and that, and they thought I had hepatitis, and I did for a while. But they really didn't know what was at the cause. And so they said, after 2 years of seeing various doctors in Santa Barbara and elsewhere in L.A., they finally said, you know what, you just keep getting worse. And if you continue on like this, you will be dead in 6 months. And by this point, I was pretty much bedridden and could barely move around. You know, the mysterious disease, nobody knew. And they said, you just got to, we got to get you into the hospital, and we got to get you 24-hour attention. And I was at that point, now back to what TM had allowed me to experience, which was that I was greater than my body and greater than moment by moment thoughts or emotions. And it propelled me to make a choice. It was easy at that time because I wasn't married and, you know, single guy, no children. And I just said to myself, I said no to the doctors. I don't want to go to the hospital. And they were like, whoa, what's going to happen to you? And I said, well, I don't know, but I'm just going to let go. I'm going to trust in the universe. I'm going to pray to a higher power that if I am meant to be here, because here I am 25 years old and I've got, you know, a lot of money, I drove a brand new car and I was with the Beach Boys and, you know, all those material things, and emotionally fulfilled as well because of the music. And I felt like, wow, you know, a lot of people don't even get this in a whole lifetime, and I've got a lot. So it was easy for me to just pray to the infinite source, which I wasn't clear what that was, and I'm still not actually, to give me a, you know, to either take me or not. And I think that came...
Thy will be done.
Yes. Yes, I think that largely came because when we say something like "Let Thy will be done," I actually believed and experienced something greater than my individuality. So I had the near death experience in March of 1979. Do you want me to go on and start talking about that?
Yeah,
sure. You bet.
I'm not keeping track of the time here, and I don't want to, you know, mess up your show.
That's all good.
Okay. So, you guys are so kind.
It helps that you're interesting.
Good. You know, hopefully this hour wasn't supposed to be Beth singing, and here I'm just blabbing away my own story. You know.
If Beth and I are finding it interesting, so is our tribe.
Good.
All perfect.
Thank you all, man. I can feel you.
Yeah.
My first experience, I woke up, you know, and I was feeling horrible and stumbled around, and either I fell over and hit my head or I passed out. I'm not sure. I don't remember that part. It's a blackout part. But I remember being above my body, and I never heard of a near-death experience at that point, 1979. So I'm, in a way, kind of talking with language that I since have read about others in NDEs and phenomenon. So I saw my body on the bathroom floor. And my first thought, if you could say that, was, wow, I am greater than the body, because I am perceiving there's a higher nervous system here. There's a higher quality of perception that is not limited to my brain, because there I am down there. And then I remembered my prayer of surrendering to "Let Thy will be done," and the next experience was just one of total light, infinite light. There wasn't an I experiencing the light. There wasn't a robber experiencing light. There was just light, only light. In that light, there was complete fulfillment, complete joy, complete love. Then there was a slight separation from the light, and then there was a quality of a perceiver perceiving the light. So then it became a dualistic. So there's one light, and we were all there, and everything is arising from that light and had arisen from the light. And I use light because I can't figure out any other term, not like sunlight or, you know, light from our light bulbs, but just that's an expression. When I perceive the light, then there's a perceiver, and I realize that, this is some remnants of Robert Williams in a domain of bliss, in a domain of love, in a domain of fulfillment. And at that point, I was given a choice. A being showed up, and I was given a choice. And my question was, the choice was to go back to the light or to go back into my body. And so I said, well, do I have a purpose? And the answer was yes. So, of course, I knew that I had to go back. And so then as I began to, you might say, decompress or go down into my, back to my limited physical body, I experienced these various domains, the various dimensions of reality. I write about that in my book, so I won't go through each one. But one of the, probably the most beautiful part of this now, that the light can't be compared to anything. It's total, just imagine, all your dreams are true, everything is no suffering, everything is resolved in this pure light, bliss, love. But when I also, when I experienced my body again, so now I'm conscious, my heart started to beat, my breath, and I kind of wiggled my toes, felt my body. Like I say, I was living in Santa Barbara, very beautiful, and we had a garden outside, we were close to the ocean. And I remember hearing with my physical ears now, my body and my ears are hearing the sounds of the garden, the sounds of nature, and these insects and the birds chirping, and the sound of the ocean. And there was just the most amazing realization that the intelligence of the earth with the birds and insects and all living things, including our own individual body minds, was the same intelligence. There was not a separation of the intelligence that was governing how the birds were singing or how the insects were making sounds and how the ocean was working and the trees and the winds and this beauty of nature. And later, you know, I did research. This universe is so intricate and is just on such a critical balance. If the rotation of the earth was just a little bit more or less, we'd be spinning off into space or back into the sun. So I understood that in kind of a download. I'm in my body, and I'm realizing that the very intelligence that is governing the earth and nature also was governing my heart beating again. This wasn't a personal thing, you know. This was a universal intelligence that had located me in my personal body and my personality, started my breath and heart. I also saw a bunch of symbols when I was coming back into my body, which I can get to. But that experience of oneness with nature, our bodies, all elements that are found in our physical bodies are found in the earth. So we are not separate from Mother Earth. And the intelligence of nature is also the innate intelligence of every cell of our body and our own the organs and our hearts. So I cleaned up my mess in the bathroom and took a shower and wrote down as many things as I could remember. And that light really has never left me. The experience of light, the experience of oneness hasn't left. And I, of course, felt that was somehow related to my reincarnation or my the grace that allowed me to continue to live in this body. And that started my, you could say, my research years. I quit the entertainment business and drove my BMW and bought a sprout farm and began doing research with plant growth and health and other things like that.
Wow, what an experience.
It sounds, isn't that awesome? It sounds like, just using my own personal words to describe what you just described is your expanded awareness that of all the waveforms and particles that make up everything and the different lengths of the waveforms and how that all, I assume that, you know, if I'm even close to describing what your experience was, I assume that's what kind of flowed into the whole quantum code technology experience.
Your assumption is exactly correct.
Okay.
So, Dagny, so the symbols that I had seen, I wrote down. At first I thought they were like gifts to me. No. Not correct. These symbols are found in nature, and they're found in art. They're found in music. Let's define a symbol. It's relation, a geometric relationship. You could say relationship, like ratios. So it becomes technical. But if you're looking at something that we associate as being beautiful, like the sunset, or a natural environment, or even a beautiful piece of art, or listening to beautiful music, there are certain frequencies and relationships of those frequencies that are resonating with the very structure and the very intelligence of nature and the very time of Earth that we are experiencing right now. And there's 108 specific codes, we call them, or mandalas that I found in all the different religions, even the Cherokees and the Taoist, and so universally, these symbols, these relationships, angular relationships, geometries, are found in the art throughout the times, and they're encoded.
You know what?
Can I just
interrupt you for a quick second to just direct our listeners? Let me direct our audience to as soon as you're done listening to this show, pop over, make a note, go to YouTube, and watch Donald Duck defining the Fibonacci sequence and sacred geometry. It will all unfold and make sense to you.
Oh,
I didn't know Donald Duck was into that. That's so cool.
It's so much fun. This video is so much fun. You will just love it, Robert.
Wonderful.
Okay,
wonderful.
Go ahead.
Well, that's it. If Donald Duck knows it, then we know it's true. That is
I'm telling you, they did this video is so brilliant to describe all of what you're talking about.
Oh,
really fun.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Donald Duck.
Yeah.
Okay, so that confirms it. The symbols were not for me. The symbols are us.
Yes.
The symbols are us. Symbols are symbols only to a certain point. So my quick analogy is, Beth, if you saw a sheet of music, immediately know those are symbols. We've got the treble clef, we've got the five lines, and we've got notes there. So we know it's music. We know if we're a little bit more adept, we know what key it's in, and then if we're perhaps yourself or Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys who had perfect pitch, he would look at that, and the symbol immediately would be a note that he'd start singing, and he'd sing it perfectly in pitch. So the symbol's there to remind us who we are. And at a certain point of our evolution, the symbols activate who we are. And we can still have the symbols. They're still there. They're still beautiful, and they show up in art and nature. But what is more exciting is that this is the time of an activation or an awakening of higher consciousness. And the higher consciousness, the symbols that I saw and that I learned about years following, are about the awakening of the heart. So as humans, we've evolved through all kinds of different phases of our development, just like anything would, like a seed to a blossoming rose. There's these phases, the caterpillar to the butterfly. So humans have, we're on a bridge right now. We're on a bridge between the prevalence of a ego-based society and the prevalence of a heart-based society. We're on this bridge. And you, Dagny, and you, Beth, and all your listeners and the community that you formed are resonating with the heart-based reality because obviously you're doing what you're doing and everyone's listening. And we still have pain, and we're not free of suffering. And that is also an indication that we want something more and that there is something more. If we really believe that this was as good as it's going to get on this planet, if we really believe that, we wouldn't be able to be happy. We know the happiness comes because of our insight, our intuition, that we are moving out of an age of ego-based and the abuse of the personality or the separate self that is afraid of the other, so we try to either block out the other or kill the other or worse, into a place where innately we know we are one with many faces, with many individual gifts, many, many wonderful things that are unique to each of us. And that's the amazing part of this creation on Earth, is that there is a unified field, there's a unity of all of us, but we never lose our unique signature, our unique creative gift. So no two cells are alike, no two snowflakes are alike. We've been hearing this for a long time. And as we move to the age of the heart and awaken collectively, we will not lose our individuality. That's the whole purpose. We'll actually gain more awareness of who we are individually, find our place in the cosmic choir, find our role, find our song. No matter what we're doing, we could be just driving a truck. It doesn't matter, because that radiance fits. That radiance has a location in the wholeness of this time period of the awakening, the heart, the blossoming. And it's a phenomenal time. And that's why we're doing what we're doing. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book. And one of the reasons I'm so grateful for people like you, Dagny, and people like you, Beth, for persisting in working from your hearts. It's beautiful.
Well, your story is quite amazing and quite beautiful, and the connection that you made when you first found out that you had the problem with your armature, that you wanted to find something that was deeper, something more intrinsic, and then you found it. You know, you remembered who you are. And I think it's so amazing to have these kinds of experiences, but I think people can remember who they are if they, you know, direct their intention to that. And I think it's a beautiful thing. Before, you know, we run out of time, could you please tell us what the Heart app is exactly and what it does?
The Heart app is those 108 mandalas. And what we, with a lot of smart people I work with, we figure out how to broadcast them over the airwaves. So when you go to the Apple Store or a Google Store or an App Store and you download the Heart app, it's H-E-R-T with the symbol plus, the Heart, it's a one-time download, a one-time fee, I think it's $1.90 or something, and you get these frequencies, you turn it on, you get these frequencies that come through your cell phone. And we did a two-year study from University of California, Beverly Rubik, and the app actually increases the physical heart's health, reduces stress, and it's a way that we can join a community, because we want to get to as many people as possible to have that effect on the masses.
Now, how does it reduce stress, and how does it actually work? What does it?
If you're out in nature walking around, it's the same frequencies. If you're out in nature walking around, your stress will go down. Yeah. So this is a way to introduce those natural frequencies, even though we're using a cell phone, which is not grown from a tree, and we're involved with computers and all kinds of gizmos. We're not in pure natural environments. And that's okay. That's where we've evolved to. So what we're doing here is we're reintroducing, we're amplifying those natural fields. And is if you're in a natural field, your stress will go down and your fight-flight response will begin to become more appropriate. If there's a tiger that's running, then we'll be ready for that tiger. But if the tiger's not there, then we can actually relax a little bit more.
So it does it through frequencies and then the resonance.
It does it through energy. Subtle energies, mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
Subtle energy. Wonderful. Oh, this is great.
Well, I hope that you will come back.
Loveisthepower.com.
Say that one more time.
I was going to give a plug to the website. Yeah, loveisthepower.com is where you can get everything. You can get the app.
Oh,
it'll take you to the Apple Store or take you over to Amazon if you want to buy the book.
Glad that you said that because I had a different website on the show site. I was using a different website. So loveisthepower.com.
I think they're all linked now, so it doesn't matter.
No, it's perfect, everybody. Loveisthepower.com, and that will be a link right on the show site when you listen to the show. I'm also going to put the link to that Donald Duck discussing Fibonacci sequence and sacred geometry.
So
that'll
great.
Be fun so that everybody can just find that really easily as well. We hope that you will come back on the show at some point and talk some more about the research that you did to come up with the quantum code technology and the HEART app and what the research is showing you guys and maybe we can even go into the technology to revitalize drinking water a little bit because I know our audience would be really interested in that.
Time flew by, didn't it? And I'm sorry if I talked too long.
It did. There's nothing to be sorry about. It's all perfect. Would you be willing to come back sometime?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
It's a privilege.
Fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what. If you had just some final thoughts that you wanted to share with everybody before we sign off today, what would you have to share?
My final thought is it is really deeply sincere that I am grateful. I am grateful. We're all in this together now. So everyone that's listening, you both, we all have our individual lives and we've all persisted and we've all had to jump off cliffs without knowing if we had wings or not. We're all here and we're all doing this together. So my final statement is I love you all and I'm so thankful for all of you.
Oh, that's so nice. Well,
thank you
for being on our show and for all the work that you're doing on behalf of humanity and the planet Earth. And we look forward to you coming back.
Here
to the show,
thank
I mean.
You yes.
Yeah, you know what? Your final thoughts made me think of the quote that you have in your work that says, I am this, you are that, all this is that. And I think that's very powerful.
We're all together.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, thank you. Thank you again very much. We've been speaking with Robert O. Williams today. He is the author of the newly released book, Love is the Power, Moving Humanity from Fear to Love. Go to loveisthepower.com to pick that up, to also take a look at these other technologies, you can get a link to the Heart Plus app. And, thank you again, Robert. We've really appreciated having you on the show. This has been fun.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.
And to our audience, as always, we love having you join us. We really appreciate you. And we hope you'll listen in again next week to Echoes of the Soul Radio, brought to you by Matrix Productions. And until then, peace.
Peace and love, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in to Echoes of the Universe. Join us again for conversations that inspire you to realize your endless possibilities. Same time, same station, same universe.